Okay, so here's what's different. And I don't know if it's obvious yet. So for people watching this, since the beginning of this, you know, since basically the fall of man, I've been directing the show while hosting the show. I'm not doing that right now. Do you know who is? Skip, okay? You may not be able to see Skip or hear Skip, but Skip watches and Skip knows. He is directing this digitally. It's a weird new age that we're in, that Francesca's at her place and I'm at my place. All of our producers, graphics people, editors are at their place. Skip's at his place, but the thing he's directing on is at a separate place, and all of us are being digitally beamed into that place that he then controls from a different location.
Dude.
It's hacker stuff, okay?
Yeah, I was gonna say, if this blows your mind, John, just wait till you learn about TikTok.
Oh my God, you know, I was really hoping with TikTok that, like with Vine, I could literally go the entire length of its existence without learning what it was. I won with Vine, but not with TikTok yet.
Just anyway. Wait till another giant company buys it out, it'll be
exactly.
Fine.
Exactly.
Like Microsoft.
Yay, they'll surely save us.
Yes.
You know what? You know what I won't stand for? The Chinese stealing my data. You know what I will stand for? Any US company doing that. Or the government.
Made in America. All right? Big brother USA.
Exactly. Well, look, everybody, we do have a show with lots of news that we're gonna get to. It's gonna be very exciting. And you know what? Maybe just Let's hit the like button. You know what? Let people know the stream's here. It's basically stroking the head of the algorithm a little bit. It likes it, so let's do it. And we have a lot of stuff that we're gonna get to. We're gonna be still reading your comments and your super chats and all of that. I did wanna just do one little news update before we launch it. Actually, two, I'll say. Two updates. One, we were talking about the post office last week. Over the weekend, they cleaned house, a ton of execs. It's not super exciting to talk about for 15 minutes or whatever, but I did want to let you know that the war on the post office is not going well from the post office's point of view.
No.
Yeah, it's just disastrous.
Make some cookies for your postal person.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. Do something nice. Like pimp out their tires when they're not looking. Give them some some rims, if they're allowed to have that, if that's up to code or whatever. But yeah, be extra nice to them, because yes, there is. Apparently, it's not supposed to interfere with the election.
Yeah, yeah. So they're just firing everybody. The other news update is Francesca. I'm sure that you already know this because I know that you must watch every Friday. But anyway, on Fridays we had we have our garbage people, and my garbage person was North Paulding High School. For suspending a student who had taken photos of tons of students all gathered not wearing masks, and it made the school look really bad. And the student was very brave to do that, said that she was trying to do, you know, get in good trouble and all that stuff. It was eventually reversed, but their designation as garbage turns out to have been prescient, because the school is going to be closing down for 2 days after 9 confirmed cases of coronavirus came about. It only took a couple of days before the virus started to spread through that school.
Yeah, life comes at you real fast, or exactly. In this case, death. Oh gosh. Maybe.
So we're gonna have a little bit more about COVID and schools a little bit later on. But with that, please hit the like button, share the stream. We'll be reading stuff. And with that, why don't we launch into the news? Okay. Over the weekend, Donald Trump decided to dispense with the whole legislature thing and just take control of this whole thing himself. And so he signed a number of executive orders that are helping to make sure that people have money if they're unemployed and that they won't be evicted and all of that. Or at least that's what the story is, because it turns out they don't actually do any of that stuff and they're probably illegal. But he did sign them, so we're gonna look into what they actually did. The first is supposed to be a stopgap solution for the enhanced unemployment benefit that lapsed about 2 weeks ago because our government is the worst. And so he described the memorandum that he signed on Saturday as an action providing, quote, an additional or extra $400 a week and expanded benefits. Okay, so that sounds okay at first glance. We'll go back to that graphic in a second. It's obviously not the 600 that people were getting. It's just 400, which is smaller. I did the math, but it turns out it's actually worse than that. So under Trump's measure, the federal government is requiring states to pick up about a quarter of that. That's $100 of that benefit. So the federal government's contribution will in fact be half of what it once was. On top of that, a state must agree to enter into that financial agreement, paying for a quarter for the unemployed to get anything. And once you bear in mind that many states cannot afford to pay that, or at least are saying that they can't, that means that for many unemployed people, even if this does happen, and we'll talk about why it might not, even if it is legal, they may not be able to get that benefit if their state is so broke that they can't pay the extra $100 a week. So a few holes in this particular one.
Yeah, not, I mean, John, not only that, it's not just if they're broke, but they could say that just like Medicaid expansion, which was, you know, part of the ACA, and you know, at least 10 states, maybe 12 at this point, I'm sure, I think that it has been changing, but have refused to expand Medicaid, right? Barring hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, from access to healthcare. Not because states are broke, but because, you know, these Republican legislatures once again don't believe in any kind of support for the most vulnerable, i.e. keep the sick from dying type legislation, you know, or keep people in their homes during an international pandemic, or at this point, pretty much just an American pandemic, really. I mean, other countries got it under control.
Props to New Zealand for going more than 100 days without any registered community spread of the virus.
Oh, to be a sheep in New Zealand.
I've always said that.
I know you're gonna talk about this, but I think it is very important to understand that this is not a good thing necessarily. It's like, oh great, oh, Congress couldn't come to the decision. Let's give this a bunch of really important measures to the most corrupt administration maybe ever. Cool. Yeah. Remember those stimulus checks sent to dead people? Give it to those guys. They'll be able to handle this.
Yeah, and you know, it's good. I'm glad that you pointed that out, the issues with the initial round. And that was the simplified, expedited system designed to be easy to spool up fast and get checks to people, and still took forever. And a lot of people didn't get them, but they did their best, I guess. With this new system, it has the downside of being a new system, which means that right now you're not getting that enhanced unemployment. Even once they actually try to put this into effect, we don't know how many weeks it'll take to be set up, or what lag after that people will have before they start getting the checks. You could be half a month, a month, or longer of not getting that assistance. And when you have to pay rent, that's important. And we'll be turning to that in just a minute. Additionally, Trump's ability to provide enhanced unemployment and require states to do that. I like the idea of it, if not the amounts or the distribution. I'm with him in terms of the goal. But legally, apparently people who do law has to do with unemployment, they're saying they have no idea how there's any legal provision for the president to do that through an executive order, not through legislation. So a lot of what we're talking about today will probably end up just being thrown out in court before it can even theoretically help people a little bit. But I did want to play one thing that sort of frustrated me. It gets to the amounts that he's decided on, because remember, he's just coming up with this himself. So hypothetically, he could have done 600 or 900 or whatever. He decided on 400, of which only 300 comes from the government. So he was being asked questions during the signing of this over the weekend. And I take issue with the fact that the reporter, the premise of the question is that he can do this at all. That's not necessarily determined. But take a look at how he responds to a question about the new lower amount of the assistance.
Sir, why did you decide on $400 when previously families were receiving $600?
Yeah.
That will be a hardship for many. What do you say to them?
Well, no, it's not a hardship. This is the money that they need. This is the money they want. And this gives them a great incentive to go back to work. So this was much more than was originally agreed. The $600 was a number that was there. And as you know, there was difficulty with the 600 number because it really was a disincentive.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know how many times we've gone over that there is no evidence that it's a disincentive. And in fact, multiple exhaustive studies showing that it's not, but they're just gonna keep saying it. And it's not a hardship to cut the aid by nearly 50%. That's what they want. The right-wing populist president is saying they want to be getting less money than they're getting right now.
Yeah, and there's still no plan to rein this virus in at the federal level. Like, there's still no plan. You know, that should, I understand we have to ask these questions about, you know, unemployment and all the executive orders and whether it's legal or whether it's not. But once again, it's happening into a in a context that is only getting worse. So if anything, that $600, just because it's been a few months doesn't mean it goes back to four. People are still in danger. That should go up to eight. You know what I mean? Like, actually, we should be looking at more money and not less. I think here's what I've always thought from the beginning of all this, right? That if the Republicans truly wanted to win in November, they would be the sugar daddies for the American. There would be everything that they hate. They would embrace the welfare state, right? That is actually very necessary right now.
Yes.
And say, only we are able to provide. Ah, look at the deadlock in Congress. Here you go. I'm going to give you $700, $800. You know, just like Trump loved signing his name, as I'm sure he did individually on every single stimulus check. You know, it must have taken a long time. You know, but he wanted his name on that stimulus check. Do the same thing. Be that sort of, you know, right wing populist that you somehow got into office by duping people into saying that you were. And I think now with this and these executive orders, that's exactly how they're going to be spun in right wing news circles. The problem is, rubber's gonna hit the road, man. Like, if you don't get that money or you are getting evicted, there's no amount of propaganda that's going to convince you that this president did anything else than leave you out to dry. Like, you're gonna be out of your home. You're gonna be, you know, bankrupt. Like, all of those things are actually going to come home to roost, and very, very soon. So there's only so long that right-wing media can play up, like, oh, look at how much Trump, you know, Santa Christmas came early kind of type thing.
Exactly, and especially like all the different caveats that we broke down. I mean, this is designed for headlines, press releases and campaign ads saying President Trump stepped in and got it done, and they'll never mention that it was far less money. And they won't mention that many states will just deny it. Red states aren't gonna do it. They're just, as you said, with Medicaid, they're not gonna expand it, so nobody's gonna get it there. And broke states won't be able to do it. So if your state is broke, you're now double screwed because you also won't get this. I mean, God only, and even if you do, God knows how long it'll take before you do. Who will actually end up getting this? I don't know, but it's gonna be a very small percentage of the people who desperately need it. And all of that, that truth, is not gonna end up in the ads, it's not gonna end up in the headlines, and the press releases have already been released. But let's turn now to the second part of this. One of Trump's executive orders over the weekend was to stop the eviction crisis from happening. And thank God, because we've been talking about it now for weeks and months that this is gonna happen, and so many people, once the moratorium lapsed, are gonna be thrown out of their apartments, and some are gonna lose their homes. But now we have this executive order, which doesn't actually stop that from happening. But it sounded like it did when he announced it. The new measure only states that, quote, the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Director of the CDC shall consider whether any measures temporarily halting residential evictions of any tenants for failure to pay rent are reasonably necessary to prevent the further spread of COVID-19. So it doesn't stop them from being evicted. It probably won't ever, because they have to look into it and figure it out. And even the stated goal there is just to stop the spread of COVID from people being evicted, not to stop people from being evicted by the millions.
Right.
It does literally nothing at this point.
Yeah, at this rate, it'll be like, oh, well, we had to quarantine you. Here, come to this tent city. Oops, your home doesn't exist anymore. Well, you had to quarantine anyway. So, hey, what do you want us to do? We're trying to stop a virus and keep people in their tents.
Yeah.
New tents. Like, exactly. Like, honestly, at that point, that's essentially what they're saying. They're like, yeah, we'll maybe save your home if we need to, if it helps the health plan that we don't have.
Yeah. Yeah, remember the health plan was supposed to come in 2 weeks, he said, like 3 weeks ago? Yeah, nobody's even asking about this, and they won't. Okay, so you brought up the tent cities. Well, you know, to establish those tent cities, you're gonna need money. To help out those who will be or could be evicted, you need money, no matter what form the help comes in. So let's turn now to the money that the executive order sets aside to help people. Oh wait, there's none. It doesn't set aside any money. There's no funds because there's no plan because this is all a sham. It does nothing to stop the eviction crisis from going forward, but it does generate a news cycle that makes it seem as if the president was trying to do that. It's convenient for appearances, not convenient if you can't pay your rent. And because his unemployment, enhanced unemployment extension also effectively isn't going to reach almost anyone, you're probably gonna face that issue. And so what we're hoping for at this point, I guess, is what we're hoping for before he signed that executive order, that somehow the Senate is going to come to some sort of agreement and actually prioritize it. But this sends a pretty strong signal, I think, from Trump to Senate Republicans that this shouldn't be a priority, that stopping people from being evicted isn't one of his priorities and it shouldn't be one of theirs.
Absolutely. And also, the fact that Trump gets to be the fake hero in this sense and not congressional Republicans also says a lot about the party. It says that Trump gets to take the glory and all the Republicans are willing to give him that, of course, because this is the party of Trump and they've hitched their horse to this, you know, I don't know, just sort of sedentary pile of horse, you know what? and that's it. But you know, but like, if I'm in Congress and I'm a Republican, there's part of me that's like, no, we should get the glory for striking some kind of deal. Let's like come up with a deal, even if it's bad. You know, you can get some Democrats to go along with a bad deal. Come on. Mm-hmm. Like, but it would save, you know, my behind come November. It's gonna save me with my voters and my constituents. But that's not the case here. Once again, we're doing everything we can to overinflate this president, and we'll see what happens.
Exactly. There's a couple of others. The one about deferring student loan debt payments. So far, it seems like it will actually do what it's pitched as doing for a couple of months. It doesn't actually cancel or anything like that. And you know, good luck in a few months when you have to pay all that extra money. I don't know how that's going to happen, but it at least does actually defer it. Another deferral you have is the payroll tax cut. So the payroll tax measure that Trump signed Saturday doesn't actually reduce the payroll taxes. So don't, you know, buy that if that's what they're trying to sell you. It defers the due date for the portion of those taxes paid by employees, 6.2% for Social Security and 1.45% for Medicare until December 31st. So they're pitching it as huge economic stimulus. You know what? It's gonna put more money in workers' pockets. But if you've been paying attention to the beginning of this, you'll know that there's multiple reasons that that's not going to happen. For one thing, you're still almost certainly gonna have to pay that. So you better start saving. You know how much? The amount that they're deferring. So if you spend it now, what are you gonna do come December 31st? And that's if it's even passed on to you, because there's no guarantee the businesses are gonna do that, because the businesses have to pay it at some point. So they're likely, with all of this uncertainty, to just hold on to it anyway. This is such a ridiculous sham. It is this facade of caring, a facade of stepping in and being the strong man. Like, the strong man is at least supposed to do things, horrible, terrible things, but he's supposed to do things. This strong man can't even do it. He just says he's doing things and it's not actually there at all.
Yeah, I mean, and the point is that they already got their money. Mnuchin, their friends, this administration, all the cronies already got their money. They already got their stimulus. They already got their bailouts. They already got their tax breaks from this crisis. They have made money off of us. That millionaires have become only richer. Let's never forget that. Like, and if anyone tells you that we should put this behind us, because this is not going anywhere, this will continue through November, through the election. We need to come out of this. You know, we're gonna come out of this with a lot of, hey, gotta tighten the purse strings, can't have Medicare for all, can't have a Green New Deal, can't have any of these things that will save people and the planet and keep people in their homes. Oh, yeah. You can't have an eviction moratorium because then the housing market won't be able to flourish and do all the wonderful things it does, like prey on poor people, right? And make others rich. Like, no. You know, no matter what happens in November, we need a new deal. We need a new deal. We need to approach this from a people-centered perspective. And I also think, man, get these fools to pay back the money that they stole. Like, F that we just have to keep on moving on. Where's the accountability? I wanna know, where did our money actually go? Where did our taxes, where did they actually go? And God, how can we redirect them?
Mnuchin has it. He's handing it out. How much of it? What percent? I have
Shake
no
Shack?
Idea.
I mean, come on. At least like Shake Shack for life for all Americans.
Exactly.
Can you at least do that?
Imagine executive order. Everyone eats a free Shake Shack. and we have no idea, and we'll probably never know. I mean, especially look, if he gets reelected, then no, those trillions of dollars are just gone. Forget about it. You're never gonna find out. So anyway, yeah, lots of issues with that, obviously, and I hate the presentation of it as actually caring about any of these, that it has anything to do with coronavirus or the eviction crisis. And it's so stupid too. I mean, sort of a version of what you were saying about if they really wanted to win. I saw a poll that a third of renters can't afford to pay their next rent payment. And now their landlords are going to be legally allowed to evict them. And so they're going to. Oh, yeah. And that is going to happen. Like, you can try to make a good campaign ad, but if millions of people a week are being thrown out of their homes, I feel like that's gonna hurt you in the election, or at least it should. I guess we'll see. I don't know. Apparently you can kill 160,000 people and it cuts you by 2 points, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, all these executive orders, it's not just that they don't do anything, and it's not just that they're probably illegal. It's also that it's time here on the Damage Report to do what we always do, which is pointlessly point out hypocrisy. Here's a video mashup of Trump talking about Obama's executive orders.
You know, Obama signs his executive orders all day long because he can't get along with anybody. Mm-hmm. It's not the way it's supposed to work, as you understand. You
know, he doesn't work the system. That's why he signs executive orders all the time, because he can't get his own people to go along.
So he signs executive orders. And then everybody sues, and you're not supposed to be doing that.
He just goes out and signs, like last time, executive orders. In theory, you're supposed to, you know, the old fashioned way, get everybody into a room and get something that people agree on.
The whole concept of executive order, it's not the way the country's supposed to be run. You're supposed to go through Congress and make a deal and go and talk to people and get the guys in there. And you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you're supposed to all get together. And you're supposed to make a deal.
You're supposed to make a deal. So not only did he not get everyone in a room, did he not get the guys together, but he has so failed us that we literally can't get the guys together. They're not allowed to be in a room together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also just jealousy. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Trump not wanting to do the thing that says executive on it.
Exactly.
Like, if it's executive, he's doing it, he wants to do it. And oh man, the idea that this president is a deal maker, once again, it's like your 3 year old, like, you know, diapers full of poo. Even though it can totally go to the bathroom on its own, although this president, we don't know, hashtag show me the undies.
Oh my God.
But like threatening you, like, no, I don't want to eat my peas. Like that's, I mean, like what kind of a negotiator are we talking about? I really want to see the movie The Negotiator redone with Trump just being like, fine, blow yourself up. I don't care. I didn't even like him anyway.
Oh God, anyway, look, in the long run, it's not, none of this is gonna matter, because again, it doesn't actually do anything. But you know, I mean, it's a signal to us that maybe he's getting in the mood for executive orders. I mean, what else is gonna come? Let's say he loses, like we were talking about this last week. Everybody's like mentally, I can't speak for everybody, but I will anyway. Everybody's like, November 3rd, we could be saved. Yeah, he's still gonna be president for a couple months. Like, you don't think he's gonna be passing executive orders? There was news today, he's likely to cut the methane regulations from the Obama era this week. Why? Because he can just do it.
Why not?
He's gonna do so much damage in those last couple months. There is going to be poo smeared.
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll start like 7 wars. Lame duck Trump will be the scariest Trump ever. Remember how Obama was kind of like the coolest version of himself? You know, when he knew he was going out and was like, all right, cool, you know, pardoning Chelsea Manning, that was dope. Yeah. You know, all these like cool things. Trump will be the absolute opposite of that. Lame duck Trump starting the hot wars left and right.
Exactly. The worst duck.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies. debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Larry Kudlow is out attempting to sell Trump's executive orders, but he forgot one very important step along the way. Knowing it all, what's in them, even the most basic stuff, he has no idea, basically. But we're gonna go through a few videos of him being interviewed by Dana Bash. First, here he is updating his talk last week about executive orders and what could be done.
I want to remind you of something that you said about this kind of move just this past week. Listen.
We got to fix and extend the unemployment issue right now. I don't know. I don't think that can be done administratively. I think that requires an act of Congress.
So the whole question of whether there's the money for this to work is one. But what even you yourself said is whether it's even legal. Do you think it is?
Well, I'm not the lawyer, and I probably spoke out of turn there because I worked all week with our counsel's office, and they proved to me that we could use the Stafford Emergency Act and that we could repurpose funds to do that. So I probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, no, you probably shouldn't have. You probably shouldn't have taken any position knowing that the man you work for is Donald Trump. And he the second you take a position, he picks you up and throws you under the bus. But anyway, but the thing is, yes, he's not a lawyer, but he's kind of right. Some of the stuff you can't fix by executive order, that's what makes them illegal.
Oh, Kudlow, you're so in over your head, buddy. But there will be a cushy Fox News commentator job waiting for you when you get out of this, or a book, or a best-selling book if you decide to jump ship before November. However it goes down, let's not forget Larry Kudlow. And I've said this before on the show, praised the invasion of Iraq because the stock market surged. Praised, which many people did, praised the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster because the markets weren't affected. Is anyone who would give their first, second, and third born to the market gods and sacrifice them, it is Larry Kudlow. He does not care about human life. He only cares about the market, whatever that is truly. Because here's the economy, and the market that Larry Kudlow and all of the Trump cronies care about is this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at the top of the exploitive pyramid, that's what they care about. Okay, so here's the thing. Earlier, we tried to explain what, if any, money you might get from the enhanced unemployment benefit. Okay, we did our best to explain it. Now let's see him doing his best trying to explain it.
Today,
so when
they
will
were
people
three,
see their
months
first
ago.
Checks?
I don't want to be specific because you might hold me to it, as you should. But I think it's going to be in a couple of weeks, and I think it's going to come to about $1,200 per person. That's a huge
wage increase.
You
keep saying $1,200 per person. Are you talking about in addition to the unemployment that they're already getting?
Oh, no.
Where does that number
that's
come
the
from?
Payroll. I beg your pardon. The $1,200 will come from the payroll tax deferral.
Okay, we're going to get to that.
Okay. This,
all right, because this is there's a lot of numbers here, and it's a little confusing. I'm going to get to payroll tax in a minute. Go ahead.
It should be $800. I beg your pardon. It should be $800 for the unemployment.
$800 or $400?
No, it should be $800. If the states step up, we're prepared to match. That should be come out $400 federal, $400 states.
Okay, we'll move on because I think that's not what the president said, and it's a bit confusing. And I think the fact that it's not entirely known is very telling.
No, she just gave up and moved on. They never landed on the actual number because he has no idea what is in the executive order.
No idea. I'm sorry, 1,200, no. I mean, 600, I say 800? No, no, yeah. 800, that was my bowling score. No, is that a bowling score?
That's a good one.
It's a very good one.
Yeah.
No, I love that. That's so, it's homie, it's 400 from what we understand. And 300 has to come from the federal government, and you're asking $100 from the state. And that's enhanced unemployment benefits. If that even ever happens, whenever it happens, we're trying to clarify things. You work in the government. We're just trying to interpret you.
It's trying hard. It was like any scene where a cartoon idiot is bargaining, like haggling, and the number just jumps up and down depending on what they have no idea how it works, except that he's one of the most powerful economic advisors to the most powerful man in the world, and he has no clue what he's talking about. Let's turn to one more thing that he has no clue what he's talking about. The payroll tax cut, which isn't really a tax cut, it's a deferral that you're still gonna have to pay. It's like a mirage of a tax cut. Theoretically, making a payroll tax cut permanent would be a disaster for Social Security and Medicare, which that tax cut pays for. And that is a fact, but an inconvenient one, as will be demonstrated in this video.
But the president said explicitly that if he gets reelected, he will make the payroll tax cut permanent. As you well know, these funds go into and help pay for Social Security and Medicare. The president promised many times not to gut Social Security and Medicare. So isn't that exactly what he would be doing here?
No, he will protect Social Security and Medicare.
How does he do that and cut payroll taxes at the same time?
Well, hang on. When he referred to permanent, I think what he was saying is that the deferral of the payroll tax to the end of the year will be made permanent. It will be forgiven. The tax is not going away. We're still going to have the Social Security tax.
He said he would do away with it. If he gets reelected, it was a new campaign pledge.
But I think that he was referring to doing away with it. I believe he was referring to doing away with the payback of the deferral.
Just give him a call. Give him a little ringy ding. Like, quick little text.
Ref, call the fight. He's dying out there.
He's dying.
So Shadows in the chat, where is it? It says, only had T Martinis, sir. it's Larry Four Martini Lunch Kudlow. Okay, so here's the thing. Because look, it's funny that he's floundering, but it's consequential. Because if they made it permanent, if they got rid of or drastically cut the payroll tax, that would be disastrous for Social Security and Medicare. And whether that's what he's trying to do seems kind of important, especially considering the historical context of Trump and the payroll tax. So yeah, no, it's just for this. It's not permanent now, even though back on August 19th, let's see, of last year, White House officials were eyeing a payroll tax cut in an effort to reverse the weakening economy, just a permanent one. That's what they were doing last year. You know, March of this year, he said we'll be cutting entitlement programs at a Fox News town hall, and then had to walk it back saying, well, that's not what he really means, even though that's exactly what he said.
Of course.
And that was March 6th. So March of last year, he had a budget proposal that cut $1.5 trillion from Medicaid, $25 billion from Social Security, $845 billion from Medicare. So you can understand why we would be a little bit cautious about you seemingly permanently cutting the payroll tax cut when you've been trying to permanently cut the payroll tax this entire time.
Can't the rich just leave already? Like, just go to Elysium. I've always said this, go to Mars, Elon, hurry up. Just stop gouging us. I mean, they'll find a way to continue, but a little bit of me just like, just find Pandora. Go mess with the blue aliens, get rocked, you know, because like we need to rebuild here and you just keep on trying to gouge us for everything that we have. Leave, yeah. Leave. How much more do you need? Straight up.
I think at a certain point, like, you know how we've always sort of said, well, why are billionaires so greedy? They can't, it doesn't make a material difference in their life. If you have 5 billion or 60 billion, it doesn't matter. You can buy whatever you want. Because it's not actually the money. It is like, it is just the power. It is the ability to wreck people's lives and do all of that. That's what they're getting off on something. It isn't money. They're already capped out on the getting off meter when it comes to money specifically. There's something else that they're drawing from all of this.
Yeah.
By the way, one other comment, Steve Mnuchin was interviewed and said that on whether it'll be permanent, because if it's permanent, then theoretically you keep the money, but Social Security and Medicare are gonna be significantly hit. If it's not permanent, you're not keeping the money, which means that you're just being told to spend the money, but you're gonna have to pay it back, even though you probably won't be able to. So both of those are bad. And Steve Mnuchin said in the interview that it will be forgiven, i.e. It'll be permanent if Trump is reelected. So they're gonna give you this money, but unless you reelect Trump, you're gonna have to pay it back. But Obama had Obama phones that he was trying to buy people off with. It's amazing.
Anyway, I mean, this is the wish list, right? Did McConnell get corporate immunity? I can't remember.
I think, well, they didn't end up having a bill, but that was one of the big things that he was pushing for. And I have a feeling it will end up in whatever the final bill is.
Oh, it will. So that's the last thing on the wish list, you know?
Yeah, just the corporate immunity.
Yeah, cutting Medicare and Medicaid permanently, corporate immunity.
Trump's promising it.
Tax breaks.
Yeah. For years now, Donald Trump has been claiming one particular achievement, perhaps above all others, that he passed Veterans Choice, which for decades presidents have been trying to do and couldn't. He made this claim, in fact, over the weekend. Here he is.
Before we begin, I've just signed two bills that are great for our vets. Our vets are very special. We passed Choice, as you know, Veterans Choice and Veterans Accountability. And they've been trying to get that passed for decades and decades and decades, and no president's ever been able to do it. And we got it done, so veterans have choice.
Okay, so that is a claim that he has made, according to Daniel Dale, reporter who tracks his lies. He has made that claim over 150 times, that no other president's been able to do it. He did it, but no other president's been able to do it for literally decades. Except maybe the one. Go to this picture, because it looks like Obama is signing Veterans Choice in that photo. And the reason it looks like that is because he was, and that photo was taken on August 7th, 2014. And that photo is on defense.gov. So it seems like you'd have to support the troops by acknowledging reality. But he still claims he did it, but it was in 2014. Seems weird. No? Why would
they didn't do that?
You
know, they've cleaned the EPA website. They couldn't just pop over to the defense website and just clean all that up and be like, President Trump is the biggest and strongest man.
It's so obviously false. Anyway, one of the biggest issues is that he keeps making this claim and he doesn't get challenged on it. But finally, over the weekend, he was challenged. Take a look at this video. When he is challenged, take a look at how he responds to it.
Congress and decide how
you ever hear the word obstruction? They've obstructed. Congress has obstructed. The Democrats have obstructed people from getting desperately needed money. Go ahead, please, right here.
President, why do you keep saying that you passed Veterans Choice?
Please.
It was passed in 2014.
Okay, excuse me. Go ahead, please.
But it was a false statement, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much.
Alpha male. When someone points out your obvious lie, you run for the hills. He just left. It was over. He's done. He wasn't supposed to end right then. He was supposed to keep going, but he just ended it because a woman called out his lie and they cheered for her. And he didn't like it, so he ran away. Thank you.
I mean, honestly, though, like, once again, it's painful to see such a terrible authoritarian and such a terrible right winger. Yeah. And I mean terrible in the like incompetent. And it makes me very scared for, you know, whatever Tom Cotton reincarnate Trumpist, you know, that comes next, because this administration points out sort of all the things not to do. And veterans are such a key one. You could easily trot out veterans as he does all the time, but do it in a better way. Instead, and I encourage everyone to read this New York Times article that was about, came out about 6 months ago. And it was about how Trump basically handed the VA to three of his friends, golf buddies at Mar-a-Lago, to systematically privatize and dismantle the VA. And not to mention all the like drunks and weirdos that have been head of the VA, you know, and like resign in shame, resign in shame. Yeah. You know, Bernie Sanders has been working around veterans' rights for a very long time now. You could have easily just worked with him. You could see, right? Trump comes into office, works with Bernie Sanders. You know, Democrats on the left are like mouth agape, don't know what to do, right? And Bernie initially was like, look, if he wants to do some good, I might work with him. Well, that disappeared within 2 months. But anyway, all to say, like, he doesn't care about veterans. He never has. All of that is BS. And it's so easy to point out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's as easy as it happened in 2014. You weren't president in 2014. Ergo,
bye-bye.
You didn't do it unless you've discovered the key to time travel. And if so, claim that, because presidents have been trying to do that for decades and they have actually failed. So if you've done that, then let us know. But anyway,
he's trying to like rock and roll this. He's like, have you ever heard rock and roll actually started with the Rolling Stones and Elvis Presley? Who's Muddy Waters?
I invented the zipper. No, you didn't, man. It's been around, I think, for at least a few years. Yeah, I just. Like
you think Trump knows how to zipper stuff?
I don't. I think he's
I think it's all Velcro, dude. The tie, Velcro. Shoes, Velcro.
But I'm really conflicted, because part of me says he has to use Velcro for easiness. The other part is that the sound of Velcro ripping makes him pee a little bit. So I'm really I'm confused about which those are.
Well, that's fine with the, you know, with the diaper, you know, when
that's true. That's true.
You just pee a little bit, it's fine.
Geez. Anyway, yeah, I guess, look, I don't want America to be ruled by a strong man. But like, if we're gonna be, why is he so weak and pathetic? Why, like, America was taken down by the weakest little strong man ever. Yeah. It's both deeply horrifying and sad at the same time. Like, come on, man, get a better dictator. You constantly hear about bias on social media, a specific sort of bias, in fact. It's that they're biased against the right wing. They're shadow banning people and they're trying to stop pages from taking off, and they're like doing fact checks and taking down dangerous coronavirus lies, and how dare they? That's what you hear. But what's actually going on? I want to run you through a few different headlines that are all from like the past week. Okay, this is like a week of actual bias on social media. So the first is on Facebook, where Facebook fired an employee who collected evidence of right-wing pages getting preferential treatment. Now, what form did that come in? A senior engineer collected internal evidence that showed Facebook was giving preferential treatment to prominent conservative accounts to help them remove fact checks from their content. The company responded by removing his post and restricting internal access to the information he cited. On Wednesday, the engineer was then fired, according to internal posts seen by BuzzFeed News. And so not only did they stop the information from being found so that nobody else could report on this, they then fired the guy who found it. And what did he find, basically? It was a lot, but a few examples are evidence that strikes against Breitbart and Charlie Kirk were flagged for fast resolution and were resolved without any explanation for why they were expedited or why they were resolved as not being misleading. So when they had lied, it was then immediately sent as fast as possible to be fixed and cleared so that their pages would not be hampered in any way. Mm-hmm. Why? Who knows? We have one other example. In one case, Diamond and Silk appealed a false rating directly with the checker. It was downgraded to partly false on merit. And as far as we know, like actually on merit. But then someone in policy or leadership at Facebook intervened and removed it and a previous rating on their page according to internal convo. So they got a false rating. They were able to expedite it where it was taken down to partly false. And we believe that was what it was actually should have been classified as, partly false. But that wasn't good enough. Somebody in Facebook leadership stripped away the entire reference to them having lied at all to protect them and their ability to monetize and have their posts seen by as many people as possible.
Huh, it's almost like actual fake news and right-wing lies makes Facebook a hell of a lot of money and they don't want to take the lies down. Mm-hmm. Whichever authoritarian it helps get reelected or elected in the first place. It's almost like the business model is misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was okay in 2016. I mean, how much damage could it do in 2020?
I think like just talk about the invisible man hero, like hats off to this employee and this engineer who collected all of that information and stuff that we know. And yet Charlie Kirk and all these right wingers continue to whine and whine about how Facebook is, you know, they've got a left wing bias. BS, man. Where has that ever been? Where is the evidence of that ever?
Yeah, exactly. And look. The whole, you mentioned the fact that basically their business model is misinformation. So I have an example of them actually fighting back against some of it. But I bring this to you so that you know the scale of the problem, that this could be done in one fell swoop. So Facebook removed hundreds of accounts last Thursday from a foreign troll farm posing as African Americans in support of Donald Trump and QAnon supporters. It also removed hundreds of fake accounts linked to conservative media outlet The Epoch Times that pushed pro-Trump conspiracy theories about coronavirus and protests in the US. And if you're wondering, wait, is it that Epoch Times? The one that played an ad when I checked in on our stream today? Yeah, it's the same one. So they're getting in trouble, but they can still advertise for some reason on my channel. The scale of just their troll farm, it was 303 Facebook accounts, 181 pages, 44 Facebook groups, and 31 Instagram accounts, which were followed by more than 2 million people across the two services. That was what was taken out on Thursday. What still exists, I don't know. What'll be put back up once the troll farm relocates to a different part of, let's see, Romania, apparently? Yeah, they had names like Black People Vote for Trump, and on Facebook we had We Love Our President. Yeah, it was just computers in Romania. And how long had they lasted? I don't know. How many people did they influence? I don't know, but they're followed by literally millions of people.
Yeah, it's 2016 all over again. It's only gonna get worse, sadly, y'all. It's very, very scary. But Macedonian and Romanian teenagers are getting them Rolexes. They are blinged out. Good for them. Get yours. But obviously, everyone needs to right now, after this stream, call your mom and dad and make sure that they sign out of Facebook. All right, just say you're doing some technical support and be like, hey, yeah, go to the upper right hand corner, click your name, and then go down to sign out. Cool. And now go to block from your preferences and block Facebook.com. Do not allow boomers onto Facebook. All right, this is fundamental.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of just Facebook over 1 week. Let's talk about Instagram. According to an investigation from the Tech Transparency Project, since at least June, searches for Biden-related content returned hashtags with counter messaging, while searches for Trump-related content did not return any hashtags at all. Instagram has since disabled its related hashtags feature, which algorithmically suggests content relevant to a user's search, calling the discrepancy a technical error. Further investigation from BuzzFeed found that until recently, searching for hashtag Joe Biden on Instagram would return results for hashtag Trump 2020 landslide and hashtag Democrats destroy America alongside pro Biden messaging. Meanwhile, a similar search for Donald Trump did not return related hashtags. So according to Instagram, it was just a bug, whoops, that for months it was working one way against the Democrats, but for Trump, no counter messaging. Weird how that bug just happened to be there for months and affect countless searches.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Trump gets, you know, 40 more years or whatever, however long he lives after this, if he is reelected or doesn't leave office, I think you will see a sort of unification of Zuckerberg and Trump. It'll be Zucker Trump. It'll be China's, you know, security state, like surveillance state times 100. And more and more, and maybe the same with Bezos, but like this is the thing, like I don't know what's up with Zuckerberg. I don't know, like we all know that yes, YouTube, Google profits off of hate speech. They have like radicalized everyone's parents because of all the suggested videos that, you know, suddenly your dad's like, well, maybe the earth is flat, you know, that kind of stuff. But there's something particular about Facebook, and I don't know, is it because Zuckerberg likes power, or is it because he straight up is a right winger? Like he does believe, you know, he wants to join Turning Point USA. He believes Trump. Like what's actually going on? And I think if he's reelected, you're gonna see that coalescing of big data, big tech, and a government.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, they want to claim that in 2016 it was all just we were unready for this. Well, you've had 4 years. And it seems kind of worse. I mean, again, Instagram and Facebook are together. Yeah, they removed from some troll farms, but they're still largely allowing him to line his ads despite it continually being pointed out, and they're benefiting financially from it. Like 1% of the financial benefit is the money that they get for the ad. 99% is what a Republican presidency is going to do for them and protect them from, by the way. Here's the kicker on the Instagram thing though. Tim Murtaugh, the director of communications for the Trump campaign, was reached out to about that algorithmic bias against Biden and for Trump. And he denied that the algorithm had a pro-Trump bias, except that we already listed that it did, and expressed unfounded claims that Silicon Valley companies are staffed by the extreme left. The Biden campaign declined to comment. So even when it was found that for months the algorithm was benefiting Trump and hurting Biden, that is used as evidence that they're biased against conservatives because it's not based on anything. It's just convenient to put pressure on them to continue to do what the right wants. And then you have no counter argument from not just the other side, from any other side, because Biden doesn't even say anything about it. And so this is how the goalposts shift. The right wing, in terms of their politicians or, you know, D-bags like Dave Rubin, just whine that they're biased against them constantly. So either for that or for business reasons, all of these services benefit them massively, go out of their way to protect them and promote them. And no matter how much they do that, the right is just going to return with more complaints about unfair treatment. That is the entire strategy, and it works. It just works, and no one's fighting back against it.
Yeah, and I will say on the other side, you know, if Biden is elected, and no matter what, just the goal of all of us is to not be this, you know, a ping pong ball between big tech, either from China or from the US or from wherever, right? Like we need net neutrality. We need all those antitrust laws to actually be enacted, not just investigations. Absolutely, the democratization of the internet and the democratization of tech is fundamental to democracy as a whole. So, you know, you've seen Warren, actually Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, you know, lay out some of that. But we need to be very clear-headed, even as users, about what the ultimate goal is, and that it's not just giant, you know, fossil fuel industry or authoritarians in Trump's White House, but it is tech, and that goes both ways. They donate to Democrats too. They donate to Republicans. There is a very much a consensus around big tech, and so let's not lose sight of where we need to actually go with reining them in.
Everyone is waiting for the next big development in the presidential race, and that is who will be Joe Biden's VP pick. We don't know for sure. We're gonna discuss. Before that, I want to show you a bit of Corey Lewandowski on Jeanine Pirro's show talking about the fact that it is likely that Joe Biden is going to pick a woman. Look at how they spin that possible choice.
If you look at what he's done for the community, yes, but you know what, Corey? I mean, in the end, I mean, how do you separate people like that? I mean, it's antithetical to everything we're talking about today, isn't it?
Well, it is, Judge, but look at Joe Biden as he's trying to select a vice presidential candidate. His only criteria for a vice presidential candidate is gender, not the best person for the job. He's basically said, look, we're going to go back to the 1920s. I'm going to pick persons only based on their gender. It's outrageous. It's insulting to women. It's insulting to men. But he gets a pass on that because he takes votes for granted.
Yeah, we're going back to the 1920s where all the political positions were given to women.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
When women couldn't vote. That's right around then. Like, remember when women couldn't vote, but they were like vice president? That was weird.
And look, if you want to say we should and we should always have literally never considered any of these characteristics, then fine. But when it's like for literally all of history, we have been doing that in one way. And someone's like, well, like maybe we could balance it literally once in the other direction. Well, come on, that's not fair. Well, okay, Corey, were you complaining about all the men? Like, I don't think you were. I think you liked it for the entirety of your life and for generations before it. It's just so fake, the attempt to rewrite history, constantly rewriting it.
But
so sick of everything.
But if it's a woman in the Trump administration, right? If first of all, gotta be hot, sleeveless, only sleeveless, blonde, preferably, so hot, so wonderful. And if you say anything about that, ooh, you're such a sexist. Ooh, you're so sexist, and she's so fragile. And look at her, and you've offended her, and she is really doing something for women's rights in the year 2020 by wearing the shortest skirt possible. Like, you know, it's. The right, when it comes to feminism, it's so rich. I love their hypocrisy around feminism and their lack of understanding. The Tommy Lauren, like, feminism fell down a bunch of stairs, like, ideology, and only works in their favor whenever you like just talk about merit and you're just like, yeah, but you're a terrible person. Like, yeah, but they're a woman.
Yeah. It's frustrating, the whole thing. Look, when she gets chosen, or whoever gets chosen, and it's likely to be a woman, it's gonna be a disaster. But that's not gonna be why. That's not gonna be in the top 10 reasons why. It's gonna be a disaster because of who he's gonna choose, what they're gonna do. But you know, we have to bear in mind through all of this that it's the VP, which is largely irrelevant. But let's talk about who is apparently doing well on the shortlist right now, according to sources inside of the Biden. Camp. In recent days, Kamala Harris has apparently been uncomfortable with the rash of headlines about the perceived tension that she has with Biden and his team. Sources say she's been making a string of last minute phone calls, hoping for last minute endorsements. Quote, there's no doubt she wants it, said one source who had spoken to her. Even as she remains the favorite, quote, she's nervous, the source said. So most of these lists, and I generally have tried to avoid looking at any of these because he's not gonna pick somebody that I'm gonna like. So are saying that she's still considered the number one choice, probably.
Who will he ask to the dance? Who will it be? Who's gonna get the rose? You know, Kamala wants it. Of all the people who want it the hardest, Kamala wants it the hardest.
She does. I mean, she's making calls.
She's making those calls. She really is. And I would argue that the vice president really does matter in this case, John. I mean, you know, Biden will serve a solid 4 months.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And
he rode a bike, man. He rode that bike. Did you see it?
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's as good as I am on a bike.
Oh, yes. I am terrible on a bike. I was looking at him and I was like, wow, surprise. How does he do that?
Don't you live in kind of the area where you're contractually obligated to either ride a bike or have handlebar mustaches?
Dude, I will grow a handlebar mustache before I can ride a bike.
Well. Let's see it. So anyway, yes, so he's older, so that might make it matter. Honestly, the thing is, I could list my top 10 or 20 choices and he's not considering any of those. Of the ones he's considering that I consider that he might even be theoretically considering, really, like honestly, she's probably about as good as any of the ones that he's actually likely to choose. God, this whole process is frustrating. So let's move ahead to Susan Rice. Apparently, Biden confidants say that she's still high on the list because of Biden's close relationship with her. Quote, he knows exactly what he's getting with Susan. Yeah, but so do we. which seems like an issue. Why would Susan Rice be in the top 50? Why? Just because he served in the administration? It seems so needless. What is she adding? Who is she bringing in?
Yeah, I mean, Susan Rice doesn't seem like a strong choice to me. Also, there's some, but there's very little name recognition in comparison to someone like Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it's just a return back to Obama completely. But like, you've already got that with Biden, so I don't see the need to have Susan Rice up there.
Exactly. Like, you're already, like, Biden is a return of the Obama era foreign policy. You don't need other relics of the Obama era foreign policy team. God, where's Kerry? Let's get Kerry in there as VP. As we've been talking about, they're sending the kids back to school and the kids are getting sick. North Paulding High already has to shut down because of coronavirus. And we knew this was going to happen because we actually listened to the experts who said that, yes, the kids tend to have less symptoms, but it's still really dangerous. This has been out there. Everybody should know it, but many people, even in media, still haven't gotten a lesson. I want to show you a video from Fox and Friends. And this is Ainsley Earhart shocked to find out that kids can get coronavirus.
We're all worried about sending our kids back to school. What is that going to look like for our country and for our elderly grandparents and things like that? 97,000 kids have tested positive. That was such a shock to me because I had heard kids really don't get it. If they do, they're all going to be okay. Do you know any details about that? That percentage of kids that did get it, are they all doing okay? Do you have any deaths?
I don't know about the mortality and morbidity right now in that group. You know, that was just in 2 weeks. So about 100,000 new cases in pediatric kids just in 2 weeks. And I can guarantee you that number is actually much higher. We don't really test kids that often. They're usually asymptomatic. They have very mild symptoms, but they're still shedding this virus. So that is going to artificially be low no matter how good we are about testing right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what we're worried about right now, is sending these kids to school and sending them home. And it's not the kids so much we're concerned about. Obviously we are, but it's their grandparents, their parents, when their parents then go to work, who they're spreading this to.
Yeah, right. We're just going to have to be extremely careful because.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should have in making the decision to send them back to school. So I'm going to take us back a little bit in a sec. I want to give you a chance to respond there to Ainsley Earhart being shocked at this number. 97,000, that was just in the last 2 weeks, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking about all the people that they're going to infect. Listen, kids are 97% snot, okay? All right? That's all they are. 3% is like Cheerios and 97% is just snot. We all know that. Anyone who's interacted with kids, my middle school memories are just phlegm. Like, that's all it was. It's like, oh God, where do I, you know, and like touching like dirt and stuff and like, you know, licking things and putting things in your mouth and being like, oh my God, I will always remember what a penny tastes like. Like that kind of stuff, you know? Like, so. Honestly, when's the last time you got sick? Last time I got sick, deathly ill from a child, okay? Mm-hmm. They spread anything they have to everyone around them. So get out of here. You didn't know that kids could get sick or spread this virus.
Yeah, you're totally right. But the thing is, we don't have to speak hypothetically. Like, we talked about this last week on the show. Can we bring up this graphic? So this is a Media Matters article referencing Fox and Friends talking about the fact that Facebook had taken down a Trump post that had video of Trump on Fox and Friends claiming that kids were mostly immune. I don't want to say totally immune, but I almost want to say totally immune. And they were mad at Facebook for taking down what Facebook was declaring to be dangerous misinformation about coronavirus. And she just sat there as those two morons talked about this. And like, for weeks now, including in reference to that segment, we've been talking about the fact that all of the information is out there. I'm sure people watching this can fill in the blanks. Kids under 10 pass on coronavirus at about half the rate of adults, which is better, but not nothing. Kids above 10 can actually, on average, have a higher propensity for spreading coronavirus than adults. Yes, they might have less symptoms, but that's actually kind of bad in a certain way. It means they're less likely to be tested and diagnosed as having it, which means they'll still be out in the wild spreading the virus. This is not new information. All of it was there. Ainsley Earhart had access to it. She either didn't choose to learn about this or she rejected the information. So when she ends her little video there saying we need to be extremely careful, no, you should have been extremely careful using your incredibly powerful platform in media to misinform people about something that's gonna get kids and their families sick and killed. And she's been doing that. She's been an active participant in that narrative being spread for a couple of months now because it's politically convenient to the president, or at least he perceives that it is. And so she doesn't get to claim that, oh yeah, no, I just didn't know. And now we definitely have to be careful. Okay, well, we're gonna be watching you. Yeah, let's see the next couple times you talk about kids and coronavirus if you acknowledge the fact that they're getting sick and they're spreading the virus.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, Ainsley, you're not a lifestyle blogger, okay? You are on the most watched news network in the country. You don't get to sit back and just be like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Wow, that's really scary. Like, no, you've got a job to do. Like, as a journalist, isn't that just embarrassing just to watch that and be like, whoa, like the cringe of having to admit that you misled your audience into thinking that children couldn't like contract or spread coronavirus.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, and more kids are going back to school, and that story about North Paulding, you know, having to shut down, like that's just one that we're focusing on. But God only knows how many outbreaks are going to be in schools around the country, and how many other people they're going to give it to. I expect that the numbers are probably going to go down nationally a little bit, because what tends to happen is things improve, which makes people complacent, which means that in a couple of weeks the cases are going to go up. The media, including us, are gonna notice that. We're gonna freak out about it. People are gonna start paying attention, so they're gonna be more careful, so cases will start going down. And then people will become complacent and cases will start going up. This is human nature, and that's what we're seeing, okay? And or I should say American nature, because they figured it out in virtually every other country. We just can't. And now we're infecting our kids with it too. Very excited to welcome our next guest to the show, actress and singer Peppermint. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you on. You came very highly recommended a couple of weeks ago by one of our previous guests, Bob the Drag Queen. So we're very excited to talk to you about some of what you've been up to. And it appears that despite the fact that it's a pandemic and people can't really go anywhere, you've been up to a lot over the past few months. Is it fair to say that?
I think it's fair. You know, all things considered, that's like the t-shirt, right, that we're using for 2020. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So let's quickly run through just a little bit. So you're very active in a number of different circles, but just since the pandemic began, you recruited your castmates from Head Over Heels to help raise funds for the Allie Forney Center. You're doing a virtual college speaking tour with Sasha Velour. You recently hosted the first Black Queer Town Hall with Bob the Drag Queen. And to top it off, you have a new album that is coming out next month. And I know that like everybody, like it's sort of a thing where we compete to say how little we're getting done during the pandemic, but I try to make sure that I get dressed each day. So congratulations on what you've been able to accomplish.
Tell us about a few of these events. Yeah, you know, getting dressed is still actually a challenge for me. I won't pan down. But yeah, this is all of those things are things that, you know, it's always great to kind of look back in retrospect and be like, wow, I have been busy over the past few months. But of course, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was pretty much sitting around watching Tiger King like everybody else. Yep. And in terms of, I think one thing that's really unique about this moment in time, the pandemic, and sitting, you know, everyone being sort of on lockdown at one point or another, is it really provided time for us to have conversations and witness certain aspects about our society that have always existed. And so when you're stuck at home and you have nothing to do but look at the internet and social media and things that are coming in, when the messages that are coming through are people being killed and beaten and, you know, murdered by the police and all this injustice, then most of us have wanted to do something about it, which is why I think the Black Lives Matter movement is credited as being one of the largest movements in American history. But yeah, I have been busy. It was so great to get my castmates from Head Over Heels back together, especially given that the pandemic has basically canceled Broadway for the next, you know, for about a year. It looks like for the foreseeable future, which is, you know, a major loss in jobs and revenue for the state of New York and live theater in general, you know, all over the country.
Yeah, yeah. LA, you know, hard hit in that area as well. My wife is an actress, and there are still jobs technically, but it's a very small percentage of what it once was. So tell me about the conversations that people have had, not time now to, you know, some people are leading these conversations, some people are being exposed to these conversations. What have you made of this moment? You described Black Lives Matter as one of the most successful social movements basically in American history, and I certainly agree. It's been massive and very inspirational. But that there is obviously, there are some people who are attempting to distract from that conversation, to twist it. That fight, has it been successful? What's being learned in your estimation?
Well, I think one thing that's being learned, obviously, that everyone has a different experience, especially when we're in the context of Black Lives Matter. Black folks and white folks in this country have very different experiences. White folks have a different experience than people of color in general at some point or another. And I think that's something that is just being brought to the surface that's more undeniable in a way that that may not have been in the past for a lot of people. I think many people were happy saying, you know, I'm a nice person. I'm not in the KKK, and I think we should have peace for the world. And we had a black president, so we're good. Business as usual. But I think people are starting to see the systems for what they are, the systems of oppression, racism, misogyny, sexism, and then all of the subsystems like the phobias, the transphobia, the homophobia, colorism, which is a sort of racism that exists within certain communities of color. And we're seeing all of these different things. Of course, socioeconomic, you know, disparities, which are that, you know. And so the theme of 2020, I think, is intersectionality. People are realizing that there's different factors that affect folks differently. And that even though we all live in the same country and we all might want the same things, the ways that we can get them or the access to those things is very different for depending on who you are.
Yeah, you know, and I've been glad to see that while there's this overarching conversation, but that, you know, it's many different groups, many different individuals, and that there has been room for conversations about some of the more specific areas dialed in that you mentioned, you know, and one of them that I've seen, especially earlier on in the movement, was you know, an acknowledgement that, you know, black people are being killed, but black trans people are also being killed at even higher rates. And 2020 is on track to be the deadliest year yet for the transgender community, despite the fact that, you know, people can't really go anywhere, still incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was really interesting that we were able to see at the beginning of the pandemic, at least hearing stories that, you know, nature was sort of rebounding from the effects of climate control, which is something I'm hoping everyone was happy to hear, because of the impact of people was less on our environment. But to kind of juxtapose that, you know, very early on in the pandemic and in the lockdown, there were murders. There had been continuous murders of black trans women and trans women of color and white trans women, you know, in general. Hearing that there's people who've been like murdered in a, you know, left, decapitated, dismembered, put in a box and float and dumped into the river, or a suitcase and dumped into the river, all during the pandemic, really highlighted that we can't even be protected in our own communities if we're at home or wherever we are. And I was hopeful that people would respond to these stories the same way that people have responded to seeing the horrible video of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and hearing the stories like Breonna Taylor. But I think two things have occurred to me, which is not a surprise, but seem to maintain that despite our blackness, our feminist, our femaleness, our womanness puts us at in a position where we seem to be less worthy of this attention from public. Breonna Taylor, we're still trying to figure out I know we've been talking about it. What's up? You know, and I think that the fact that this was a woman is a factor in the situation in terms of the outcry, the outrage, and all of that. And for black trans women and murdered trans women in general, Where's the outcry? Where's the rage? What we get in place of the rage, the general rage outcry, is not only a complacency, but people looking at these the videos that do surface of seeing trans women being beaten up by a group of people like we saw in Texas last year. Ayanna Dior, which we saw during the pandemic in Minneapolis, the same city as George Floyd, being beaten up. Luckily, she wasn't murdered. But, you know, people were sharing this around and kind of making comments and laughing at it. And so it just shows that there's a lot more work to be done. And I think that the pandemic, of all of the horrible things that the pandemic has delivered to us, has just highlighted the importance of that. And I'm determined to really continue that conversation so that as we continue to talk about Black Lives Matter, which I won't stop talking about, then we will also continue to talk about the trans lives that are being taken in the wake of all of that.
We saw something that you had said in an interview about what you would want out of people who want to be, stand in solidarity with the trans community. You said that you wanted them to be accomplices rather than allies. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, again, one of the things that we were able to see is a lot of people becoming emotionally moved naturally by seeing these videos and images of these unarmed Black men being murdered by the police. And that's important. I think that's the first step, is people being able to identify with that, having that resonate with people. There is, we want people to see us as human, people that are worthy of life and all the other and equality. But we need more than that, because I think that most people of this day and age, I think there's plenty of people in this day and age who would agree that someone innocent shouldn't be killed. But the story is bigger than that. It's not just one person being shot. It's sad when one person dies, and it's a terrible injustice. And a lot for a lot of people, that's as far as much as they're willing to put into it. But in order for this movement to really work, it can't only be Black people recognizing that they need more, that we want change, and we're marching in the street. We definitely need the people who benefit from the systems that are in place. And when I'm talking about the systems, again, I'm talking about the systems of racism and the patriarchy. Those are the two things that exist, the two strong systems, and they are insidiously ingrained in everything. Our economy, the workplace, how we hire, how we fire, how much people get paid, what jobs they hold, the access to housing, what happens in education, not only in how people are treated in schools, but also if you look at the history books, what stories are told, what stories are not told. This is all a part of these systems that affects everything. And so what we want to do is we need the people who benefit from those systems, men and white folks, to we're not going to be able to dismantle the patriarchy. We're not going to be able to really address sexism and misogyny without men taking part in that. Mm. It's impossible. It can't just be women trying to, you know, the people who are not in power cannot take the power unless people who are in power participate. That's just the way, the differential, that's how it works. And the same with racism. I think white folks are going to need to really, instead of saying, oh, we care about that Black person, go Black people, go, that's an ally. We want people to say, you know what, I'm going to use my access to, when next time I step into a room and I hear these conversations that shouldn't be taking place, or I think that a person of color should be in the room or should have equal access to what's happening, I'm going to use some of my power, some of my access as a white person or as a man or as whatever group to make sure that these people can get in the room and are included. And I think that's the first step. Obviously, we need legislation. We need policies that really support all of those things. But I think it won't. It's not effective unless we have the participation of all the of accomplices. We need white accomplices to tear down racism. Can you imagine if when the KKK started, or when race, when I can't say when racism started, but back in, you know, turn of the century, if most of the public rebuked, most of the white public rebuked racism and just the KKK alone, then we would have had a completely different history.
Yeah, You wouldn't even know, we wouldn't even know what the KKK was. It would have just been exactly. another extremist militia that was put down.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I think that's a great point. And you know, I wonder when you see, as you've seen throughout the period of these protests, that there have been a variety of different sort of like ways on social media that people show solidarity or support for the movement. And I know a lot of people respond to that by saying, well, it kind of feels like a lot of people, that's what they do, is they do that thing and then that they're good. They put a, you know, a black block on Instagram, or if they're a mayor, maybe they paint Black Lives Matter on a street, but then that's it. They're not an accomplice past that. Do you feel the same thing? Do you think that there's still a place for people doing this sort of public show of support? Or do you worry that it might sort of get people to just be satisfied that they've done something now?
Well, I think, you know, nothing's perfect, and we're always in danger of a sincere message turning into a sort of platitude. But, you know, these things are necessary. I think everyone should move up one or two or three levels from wherever they previously were. And so if everyone is moved into some sort of action, then that's good. Is painting a sign going to be enough? No. Is changing an Instagram picture going to end racism? I wish. No, but we obviously need awareness, and we need an openness. And so I'm a bit of an optimist from that standpoint. I'm not necessarily going to be, you know, judge the people that have only placed a sign or a picture. I'm going to take that as that person is signaling that they are ready to be brought into where they need to be brought.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a good way to look at it. I want to ask you one last question. Changing gears fairly significantly, we mentioned a few of the different things. Exactly, a few of the different things that you've been involved in over the past few months. I did find a reference on your Twitter account to an event that you just did, I believe this last Saturday, where you appeared on a Twitch stream with Bob the Drag Queen to play video games for charity. And it said on the post that you don't play games. So I'm just curious, how did it go?
Horrible. Horrible, really? For me. Bob the Drag Queen was bullying me. We played Resident Evil. I've never even played that. I got slaughtered. Bob was throwing me to the wolves or the zombies. It was terrible. But we did raise over $4,000 for the Queer Black Excellence event, which is kind of, as you said, a spinoff to the from the Black Queer Town Hall that we did. And that's awesome. Taking place next week, next weekend on August 14th in Minneapolis. Well, it's Minneapolis themed, but we're all doing it from home.
Awesome. Was that choice of game, was that Bob's choice?
Well, they know that I'm a horror movie fanatic, but I'm not a horror. I've discovered that I'm not a horror video game fanatic. And the stream is still available on Bob's Twitch. It's quite embarrassing for me.
Probably.
And
I'm streaming,
I guess. Well, we raised $4,000. They must have liked it. We also tried out a few other games, but the takeaway is video games are not for me.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I will just say, if I was bringing in someone who'd never played a game, Resident Evil, that is throwing you into the deep end.
It right is.
In the beginning. But it sounded like it was a successful event, so that's awesome to hear. Peppermint, thank you so much for joining us. You know, before we go though, I know that we've talked about a number of different topics, just talking. But next month you're going to have a bit of art coming out. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
I'd love to. I thought you'd never ask. yeah, I have an album coming out. It's called. Well, I should preface by saying the album is not just one album. It's three albums. It's a trilogy of albums that comes out over the next year. And it's basically about a year. It's my personal diary set to music. It's a year in the life of Peppermint. All last year, I found love. I was in a great place. Everything was great. Of course, all this was pre-pandemic. And then during the pandemic and during lockdown, I finished and recorded the music. And now it's ready to release. It comes out next month. The first single is called Best Sex. I'll let you pontificate what that might be about. I hope so. And the album is called A Girl Like Me, Letters to My Lovers.
Awesome. Well, Peppermint, really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.